Set down your sleepy water and your Mr. Whistle. Take off that raincoat and grab a cold beer. It's time to have a real talk about pediatric dentistry. You're listening to Bruise and Tiny Teeth, the unfiltered pediatric dentistry podcast.
Well, I wanted to start by saying, telling you, Anne, thank you for coming back doing round two on the podcast. But also, I'm like a secret admirer now of yours, because every time I get on Facebook or Snapchat or something, you are always off doing the coolest like self-help or like cool conferences or cool dental meetings or learning about real estate or doing cold water plunge. And I feel like you have done a great job finding this work-life balance that I'm really envious of. So I was just going to start by complimenting you on that little nugget there.
Oh, thank you, Casey. I appreciate that. It's taken me 55 years to figure it out, but I'm getting a lot closer to the Holy Grail, I feel like. Mm-hmm.
Is there a, you know, just so we don't talk about this to death, do you have any like words of wisdom or pearls you could kind of summarize to the dentist like me that are, you know, I'm in this stage of the grinding it out years where it's like, man, I'm working 5 days a week. I feel like I've got a lot of, you know, you got maybe student loan debt or practice debt, and it's you prioritize that and you're starting your practice versus taking care of yourself. And I think we talked a little bit about work-life balance and burnout, but are you now in the boat where like you should maybe prioritize that a little bit sooner and maybe find that work-life balance sooner now?
I think that needle skips for everybody at a different time. When I started out, I was just like you, Casey. I had student loan debt. I was the only doctor in my practice, and my ops were stacking up probably like yours, and I was working 5 days a week. So I think everybody hits that, you know, the skip in the record or the plateau or whatever you want to call it at a different age and stage in their life. And only you really know when that's going to hit. And I wouldn't say that I have definitely slowed down my days of dentistry and my clinical dentistry, but I have refilled the bucket with lots of other things that make me happy, that serve others, that bring me joy. And you just got to make sure you're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to just follow your lead on this. And actually, I meant to ask real quick too, are you going to Bourbon and Baby Teeth in September? Did you get tickets?
Actually, Bobby Elliott and I are doing a lecture together at Bourbon and Baby Teeth. So,
okay, cool. I thought so.
Assuming that Chris and Mike have a bed already stored away for us at Four Seasons, that's the plan.
Cool. Well, Chris, on that note, I'm excited. We'll get to meet in person then, hopefully, in come September time, and we can have a virtual old fashioned together. But Chris, thank you for coming on the podcast. I'm excited to kind of get us all together and talk about the zone today, because I've had a lot of interest. I actually had a podcast listener this morning reach out and ask to do an episode on it. So there's a lot of hubbub on IPEDO and Facebook right now. But to kick us off, Chris, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, your involvement with New Smile, kind of the story? Because I don't know a lot about how if New Smile Tech is like a spinoff or a merged or acquired company. So just tell me about your background with the company real quick.
Yeah. thanks for having me. We'll definitely look forward to meeting in September at Bourbon and Baby Teeth. So, New Smile Tech is the newest portfolio for New Smile, specializing in technology products, cutting edge technology products. So, since we've launched that about a year ago, we've launched two products, the Soan and the Sleeper One. My background as the national sales manager for New Smile Tech. I have 12 years experience in the dental industry, working on the distributor side for the last 12 years, and happy to have joined the New Smile team and family and leading the efforts for all sales and operation efforts across the country.
Cool. So was New Smile Tech a previously existing independent company that was bought and acquired by New Smile, or is this like a brand new organic de novo type of thing that you guys that the team there said, we want to start kind of branching off and outside of the world of crowns and materials and get into more of the tech side of things?
Yeah, it's something brand new. It's a brand new division that was created. You know, our CEO Diane, with all of her wisdom, has always been passionate about delivering high-end, effective, innovative products in the pediatric market space. So the push to go towards technology is just the was part of the immediate future, and this is our first step into it.
Very cool. So how long, I wanted to start by maybe getting a little bit of history on the Zone, because it obviously has really exploded in popularity now, but I'm going to assume it's taken a long time to get the product up to where it is, a lot of testing, a lot of development and research there. So how long have you guys been working on this? And what did kind of the development stage look like to get it up to this point where it's widely available now?
Yeah, so this journey really started with New Smile about 2 years ago when we met with the manufacturer, Dental High Tech. They're actually based in France. The units themselves have actually been around and used around the rest of the world for over 20 years. Manufacturer has been around for that long. The Sleeper One is on its fifth generation. Soen is the latest and greatest version of that. But these products have been used by clinicians around the world for the last 20 years.
Cool. Well, as part of this, I know when you and I were, working on lining up this conversation, you guys were kind enough to send me a loaner model that I'm assuming has been around the world and been in a lot of dentist hands. But it was nice because I got a chance to play with it. And so I figured that would kind of facilitate our conversation a little bit. And so I don't know which one of you maybe wants to answer this question, but for those of you who live under a rock and aren't on iPedo and have never heard of this before, I was wondering if maybe one of you guys could give like a 30-second summary, kind of describing the advice, the device, what it does, just describing it in details so that I don't butcher it on my end. If one of you two want to kind of give that description.
Chris, can I take
it? Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
Just cause I wanted to translate to the excitement from dentist to dentist. And first thing to say is people kind of get confused what we're talking about. Soen is just the cordless version of this electric dental anesthesia unit. And Sleeper One is the version that plugs into the wall. They both do the exact same thing. It's completely your choice, what you want and what you like. So when we use those terms, they both do the exact same things and help your patients and your practice the same way. The top two things that when people are like, well, why do you want it? What's like so important about it? The first thing is you literally can start doing dentistry as soon as you have finished giving your local anesthetic. So you can set this thing down and you can pick up your elevator, your forceps, your handpiece, your whatever you're using and get to work right away if you so choose. The second thing that's amazing is kids aren't chewing their cheeks. There's no collateral numbness. There's no lip biting. There's no one leaving with a wad of gauze in their mouth. Everyone can go get a McDonald's hamburger afterwards or go back to class. You know, you're not spitting out wads of gauze in your parking lot. Those are the benefits to the dentist is you can work right away. The benefit to the patient would be they are not biting them, chewing on their lips. They don't have that sensation of the tingling. That was more than 30 seconds. Sorry, guys.
Well, and it's also important to clarify because I didn't understand this prior to really getting the unit is this is a true intraosseous device. You know, I think when people think of like the wand or electronic anesthesia, you picture like, well, I'm just doing my normal local anesthetic. It's working fine. You know, all this does is just computerized in a computerized fashion, going to deliver the anesthetic agent slower, but it's a completely different system. It's a true intraosseous system. And I think that's important to understand as well.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a intraosseous injection, completely pain-free intraosseous injection. Like Ann mentioned, immediate onset with no collateral numbness.
So I was going to kind of describe the unit and then Ann, just to give listeners who are driving their car a better visual of what this is and how it looks like. And I'd like to hear from you in kind of our terms, the way that you use it and some of your basic, not without getting into too much of the weeds. I'll ask for tips and stuff later, but just the general kind of step-by-step usage. So when you get the kit, I got my big Pelican case and it comes with a wireless foot pedal. And then you've got I think Chris, you gave me this tip. I use it all the time, but I tell the kids that I got to take your tooth's temperature. It looks like a little handheld, almost like an electric toothbrush, like an electric Profi handpiece. Tell kids it's taking the temperature and then it's got, special double beveled needles. It's all wireless. And then this wireless foot pedal talks to the anesthetic device. So those are kind of the components. And then you just use a traditional lidocaine or septocaine, carpule from there. But so, Ann, just knowing now what it looks like, kind of walk me through. Let's say we're doing, you know, you've got a pulp crown on T and an MO on S, or a DO on S. Like just what's your general setup and usage just from a big picture standpoint on how you use the device?
So the first thing I would tell you is when you start, if you get one and you should, and you start training on it, make sure your dental assistants go ahead and pack up all your traditional anesthetic syringes so you are not tempted to pull them out of the drawer. That is going to wreck your learning curve. So stick with this device. Don't give up. Don't give in. Definitely pick cases like you suggested, Casey. Start with your primary dentition. Don't start with a 12-year-old linebacker. You know, we want to be successful right out the gate. So if it's S&T, I'm going right into my first injection is going to be right into the papilla between S&T. My second injection, which will be the interosseous portion, will also be between S&T, and I can get to work right away, or I can go check 3 hygiene chairs, or I now have a choice.
So when you and this is something that Chris kind of had to clarify to me, but you know, the way that the needle on this is a proprietary, this is not your everyday needle. And I guess that's important to understand that you're just getting, this is a special double beveled, you know, as Chris described it, you take this needle. And when I was using it, I would try to literally just lay it flat on the papilla with a little downward pressure and just move it. And then there's a tapping feature where you just click, click, click on the foot pedal, where if you look at it, it's just the tiniest little drop. And then you just suddenly see a little blanch of the papilla, and that means you're good. And it seemed like that would work, but the idea is it's almost like a super topical, just getting that papilla, just a little bit of anesthetic there so you can go in for that secondary intraosseous injection. Am I right?
100% correct.
Yeah. Can you, one question at this point that I was going to have you clarify, and I sometimes would get a little indecisive with, and impatient. This is another punchline I would found with this device is it works well, but you have to be patient. Like it's going to require you sit there a little bit, which is part of the reason that it works. But how would you do the tap feature? And there's different functionalities with the foot pedal. You can do a couple little taps and it can go really slow. Can you walk me through what speeds you would do and when you do the tap, tap, tap versus the long hold and the speeds at which you would do it at? That part I kind of was a little indecisive about.
So there's actually 2 major branches of how the unit works. You can either use it like you use your rheostat with your handpiece, where it's the device is not working unless your foot is completely down on the pedal at all times, or you can have it set up where you tap it to turn it on and you tap it to turn it off. So that's a major decision that has to get made out of the gate. And especially if you're using one or more doctors, that's not a feature you're going to be toggling and changing all day long. So everybody needs to get on the same page there. Are we going to use it like a rheostat? The machine's working when our foot's on it. Or are we going to use it like a light switch and we're turning it on and turning it off? So that would be the first thing to get clear within your head. And then the second thing I would say is the setting that we prefer here is when you're doing the intraosseous portion, it is very slow right at the beginning. And I mean, I'm like squinting and staring at the plunger like, okay, the light's blinking, but is anything actually, are we executing here? Is it working? And then you got to get the setting right, but there's a setting on there that once it's delivered that initial slow dose of anesthetic so that it's not uncomfortable for the patient, they're not feeling the acidic effects of it. It's not, too much pressure to the bone. Once you've got that initial rate going, it will speed up. Mm-hmm. And it's about at the quarter carpal mark. I don't know if I answered that question right for you, but that helps me spend less time giving this injection.
Okay. So I think my question, you know, there's a separate button that will change it from like purple to pink from like a slow.
Yes.
When you go back in and do the intraosseous, will you bump it up to the pink to go faster? Or do you just pretty much
No.
keep speed
I keep it on the blue, but like I said, there's a setting in there that it starts and then it'll just ramp itself up. It doesn't change to purple. You don't have to take your foot off and it will speed it up. But you can do exactly what you're saying. And that's the purple setting is really more for when you're giving, if you need to use the device as like an infiltration.
Okay. Gotcha. We haven't really talked about a lot about the intraosseous injection component of it. And that, I think there's a learning curve there as well. Chris, I think you did a nice job explaining to me conceptually how this works. Because a lot of us as pediatric dentists probably never had intraosseous training, anesthetic training. And shaking her head, no, absolutely not. So So it was kind of nice, like for listeners to kind of conceptualize what's nice about this is when you go in for this intraosseous injection and you punch this specialized needle through the cortical plate and you get into that more, you know, that like that softer bone, you're basically just injecting and like pressurized, pushing that anesthetic into the encapsulated bone around the roots. And so it you're kind of injecting it into that tight space. And I think you said, like, what's your rule of thumb, Ann, as far as like teeth back versus teeth forward? Do you find, let's say if you're going to work on a quad, let's say an 8-year-old who's got 30 T, S, and R, like, was it one tooth back you'll work on and three teeth forward? So how will you strategize if you're trying to get that quad done, picking which papilla you're going to go into?
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And just to re-say what Casey said, when you're on the bottom, you can go, the injection should get you, you should be confident that you're going to get one tooth distal, two teeth forward. And if you're working on the top, it's an equal spread. So it'll go two teeth back, two teeth forward. Everything will spread evenly on the top and the mandible, everything wants to flow to the mesial or to the midline. If I'm doing 30, you say, yes. So if I'm going to inject between the first molar and the primary second molar and okay. Depending on the size of the 8-year-old, I don't know. It's been in my hands long enough that I would be fully confident that R is going to be numb.
Okay. Are there ever times?
I had an injection in my own mouth, old lady here, mesial to number 3, and I was numb all the way over to number 10.
Wow.
Now, do I want you putting a handpiece on number 10? Probably not. But did I have the sensation of paresthesia? I did.
You did. Are there ever times where if you're struggling to get a kid numb or just for belt and suspenders, cheap insurance, you'll do both papilla like you would, if you're doing T a lot of times just traditionally, like you might go into both papillas. Like, do you ever find you really need to hit that second papilla or is it usually a one and done?
It's a one and done.
One and done. Chris, I feel like Ann and I are stealing the show. Chris, is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to add up to this point?
Hey, you guys are the dentist. I'm just the sales guy. So you guys keep talking. Go ahead.
Okay.
it's really simple, right? It's that first injection is to numb the papilla, to numb the area of where you're going to make that second injection intraosseously, right? So that second injection going into the cortical plate, through the cortical plate into the cancellous bone. Once you've entered into the cancellous bone and you start delivering the solution, like Ann mentioned several times already, that is immediately anesthetized. So once you remove the device, you have immediate profound anesthesia diffused through that area where you're immediately able to start getting to work.
So, Ann, another question I had just from a technique standpoint, something that I didn't struggle with, but I found to be a little bit challenging to get the grasp of, and I'm sure you've gotten this as well, is that secondary intraosseous injection with this specialized needle. This needle is a very short needle. It's very sharp and it's pretty stiff or stout, if you will. Like, it's not one that's going to break easily, but that technique of going in at that particular angle and trying to punch through that cortical plate, it seemed like in some kids, I had a really easy time. I would push down, firm pressure, a little twist, like I'm twisting a pen, and I would feel it kind of pop down even just a millimeter or so. And then I'd start foot pedaling it, rocking it, have great anesthetic, worked wonderful. And then other times it felt like I would fight it a little bit. And usually if I moved around enough, I could it in, I could kind of like move that needle a little bit. And sometimes I wouldn't mangle it, but sometimes I get a little bit of a bend in the needle trying to like wedge it down in there. But some kids, it seemed like it went in really easily and some kids it would fight me. So first of all, do you find that happens? And if so, is there any trick with like a different angle? Do you like to go more perpendicular, up and down? Is there any trick or do you really not even need to punch in that deep for it to be effective? Like, what are you finding with that?
I think you just described exactly what myself and Megan and Maria have dealt with as well. If you don't get the pop sound, like it's going through an egg cart, you know, a milk carton or an eggshell, that does not mean you're not successful. But if you think about it, if you had the gingiva off of there, if you were just looking at bone, right? And you took that needle against there and you could see what was going on underneath there, chances are sometimes you would butt up against something that's a little more difficult to get through. And you would be like, oh, I just need to move this around a little bit. So you're exactly right. You're seeing it right in your mind's eye that I've hit a piece of bone that's a little hard, or it's not as cancellous in this area, and I just need to readjust a little bit. So I don't really try to go way too much off angle. I try to stay just like you were saying, like, and still go in like that. I find when I go off angle is when I get into more trouble. So I just try to stay with it. Patience and being patient and being gentle are the two biggest like power, you know, skills, you know, things you need to be good at to get good at this technique.
Okay. From an angle standpoint, because you did that visually, but for the audio listeners, you know, the trick is not going in perpendicular, but going in at a 30, 40, like 45 degree angle at like a, you know, an angle to it to punch. What kind of angle do you like, a real steep angle?
I'm even higher than that. I'm probably at like a 70.
Really? Okay.
If my teeth are like, I know people can't see it, but I'm coming in like this. I'm not coming in like I'm landing an airplane. Because I feel like you have a higher chance of, you know, you're trying to hit the apex of the tooth. You're trying to get to where that nerve is. And if your angle isn't steep enough, you're gonna just be going between the two teeth, or you also have the chance of giving an inner ligament, an IL injection instead of an IO injection.
That's a good point. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so what about, is there an age that you found, before I kind of give my experience, like, is there a time where you still reach to do a traditional IAN that you find, you know, the bone is thick enough, or the kiddo's older and our success rate maybe drops a little bit? Like, what are your rules of thumb for what's a good candidate to use the sewing on versus a time where you maybe do it more traditionally?
So we graduate patients at age 19. And we have used this device on patients up till age 19. And if you just got to think, okay, if I've got a bigger person, I'm going to need more anesthetic. Like that's going to be my deciding factor right then. And when I'm talking to you, Casey, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about Megan and Maria as well. I don't think any of us have had to punt and pull out a standard syringe to get a patient numb yet. And I know that it happens. I know that this is not the device for every 15 to 20 year old bigger teenager. I can appreciate that, but we have had like great success. Will we probably get a case where it's not going to work? Yes. But I will also say, you know, when you shouldn't be pushing the limits right away, but my husband's a general dentist and literally works across the hall in the same building. And he is so jealous that we have this device and he doesn't, because it's not FDA approved for adults, right? This is for pediatrics. And when he has smaller framed women, he actually had a 22-year-old, not small frame, but a 22-year-old, it's actually our son's roommate, who knocked out a front tooth, or knocked a Maryland Bridge out during rush at Clemson a couple weeks ago. And we came in to see him, and Matt used it on that kid because he had to prep the two teeth on either side to get better bonding to put the bridge back in. And he used it on that kid. So I think if you're willing to play around with it and see what kind of limits you can push in your own patient population, we haven't had any issues.
That's good to know. Yeah. I was curious if you were going to give an answer, like, you know, we don't use it on 12 year molars, or if we have once they hit 12, we quit using it. But it's nice to know, like, and to your point, you don't really have anything to lose. If you start with it, you can always start with it, do the intraosseous.
Yeah, correct.
You know, and it's probably going to work great. And if for some reason the kid's still struggling, then you just go back to plan A, or, you know, whatever your main lidocaine syringe.
And right. And the other thing to remember too, is if you just feel like you need to give some, you don't need to give a block, but you just want to, you know, infiltrate. You don't have to get your traditional syringe out. The sewing and the sleeper one will give an infiltration. So if you feel like, let's say you've got a hot tooth, right, and you don't feel like you've got good bone to give that IO, just use it like an infiltration. Just pop all that gum tissue with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Another area I was really impressed, I think the thing that stuck out to me the most that I enjoyed was lower 6 year molars, as probably most people listening, pediatric dentists listening, will know, like, that's kind of those are the tough ones. You know, we can pretty predictably numb, just traditionally 3-14 primary teeth. But sometimes you get those lower 6-year-old molars and it's always
some hyperplasia on them too. Oh,
yeah. Sensitive. And the kid's not going to be cooperative. And you're like, well, this kid's not going to do great for a block. But if I try to do, maybe I can try septo and local and lots of PDLs and walk around towards the lingual and we can get them close. And if we don't get quite all the decay scooped out because they're not quite numb, then we'll just call it an indirect pulp cap. And then we'll, you know, so we all know how that goes. So I was impressed that I had a lot of lower 6-year-old molars that I probably would have blocked when I had the device trying it out, that I was able to use the sewing on and had really good anesthetic. To your point, right away, I didn't have to get up and leave, which you normally have to let that block, that IAN block sit. So even if you don't use the sewing for anything else, I feel like that's hugely advantageous, is a lot more predictability with getting local anesthetic on 19 and 30, because those are always like really challenging ones to get.
I completely agree. And you know, you see the treatment plan, it's 19 occlusal, and you walk in the room and you're like, okay, is this going to be like, I'm not numbing at all and I'm putting some flowable in, or am I going to walk into a hypoplastic, you know, cave? And I used to get like you, I pull out every tool in my toolbox to try to get that kid comfortable. And now that's, I don't even sweat it.
Mm-hmm. Not an issue. Yeah, that's great. So let's, and Chris, I can kind of angle this towards you a little bit, but talking about advantages and disadvantages, one big point that gets brought up is, you know, the argument, I guess, is this going to cost me money, or is this going to be, you know, provide better opportunity cost? I don't know the answer to this question as far as how much the device costs, how much the tips cost, you know, but can you kind of shed some light on that from like a cost perspective, and then just kind of convince listeners that, like, you know, okay, there is some extra cost, but you're going to make up for it by being able to do more same day dentistry. You're going to be able to not have to get up and leave. So maybe just spread a little light on the initial investment, and then maybe what the costs going forward are, and then how you might make up from that, from like doing more same day dentistry and that sort of thing.
And Chris, before you give the financial cost, can I just tell you the what you're going to gain that's not financial if you do it is you're not getting a call at 8 o'clock at night with a mom sending a photo through the phone of her kid with their lip chewed up and, oh, they're allergic and we're going to the emergency room and all this nonsense. So if you want to talk about like your mental health and that we talked about at the beginning of this call, that reason alone is what I don't, you know, I know what the cost is. I pay a lot more just to know people aren't calling me at 8 o'clock at night with a chewed up lip.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. So that part of it is obviously huge, just from a, you know, parent experience, patient experience, but from a stress level for the clinician, it's a game changer. I mean, from a cost per use standpoint, it's all in, it's about 87 cents per use every single time you use the device. With those proprietary needles, they're 27 cents a piece. The units retail for $27.50 for the sew-in. The Sleeper One retails for $2,300. So very affordable from the introductory standpoint of getting involved with the units. And then as you progress and get more comfortable, to Ann's point, it's speeding up your day. It's making your day a lot more efficient. You're not waiting around for anesthesia onset to happen. The patient's having a better experience of instantly being numb, not having to worry about collateral numbness, having full functionality of their mouth as soon as the procedure's done. The dividends on it are not just really just from a dollar and cent standpoint, but from an overall marketing and branding standpoint as a clinician.
Mm-hmm. Well, that shed some light on it. Cause in my head, I one of the things that the podcast listener this morning was wanted me to ask you guys was, is this cost efficient? But in my head, I thought that these needles, these specialized tips were going to be a dollar a piece, but no, 27 cents a piece seems pretty in line or pretty reasonable. It sounds like cost is not a huge barrier to entry, with trying this, which is cool. But I know we talked about it already, but besides the cost, like I feel like the learning curve might be the other barrier to it, which I don't know if you guys do a lot of, I'm assuming this has been so popular, it's probably been hard to keep up with demand for like getting demos out and stuff. But and I don't mean to get too far ahead or wrap up yet or anything, but like, is there a good way that people can come get their hands on this or see this device or practice it? Or like, what's availability on getting a device in somebody's hands right now look like?
Yeah. So we do have a demo program. We are at about a 2 to 3 month wait list for that right now, with the amount of units that we have and how popular it's been. So I would strongly encourage, we do biweekly webinars with Ann and Dr. Larie Johnson on Wednesday nights. So the next one is April 3rd with Dr. Larie. And then the following one is the 17th. But we do those biweekly every month. They're usually about an hour and a half. Really good opportunity for interested clinicians to see the devices, hear from users that are currently using it, not just other people who are looking at purchasing it. Ann talks about on her webinar, she talks about different clinical situations. They go over radiographs. What would you do here? It's very, very informative. Second part to that is we have a very extensive onboarding process and training process when you do purchase the unit. So we don't just sell you the unit and say good luck. We have videos accessible to view. There's a one-on-one training calls, video training calls that I do with users, also some of my account managers as well. So it's a very robust onboarding process.
That's cool. I was thinking to myself, you know, going back to cost and availability, the startup price for this, so say $2,700. So say out the door, you're at $3,000, but I just started looking at my schedule and I thought, man, if I was able to get the sewn in here today, which I don't have one yet, and that's on the list to do. But I was looking at, you know, I got the upper right quadrant done on one kiddo today who was struggling a bit, but I thought, well, I probably could have gotten that bottom right quadrant done. And that would have been not only an extra, you know, say $300-$400 worth of dentistry or more, $500 worth of dentistry, but it also would have opened up an appointment later on. So it's just going to, it seems like something, if you really did a cost analysis on it, it feels like it could pay for itself in about 2 days if you were using it to its fullest potential, which I assume you would agree with, Ann.
Completely agree with that. And it's, again, it just opens opportunities up for you. What you know, if you want to go check hygiene or you want to get more quadrants done. I had a local dentist here in town. He didn't want to wait the 3 months. And so Chris worked it out with him for me to just give him, I have two units. And so he just slept over here and borrowed one for 3 weeks and brought donuts when he picked it up and brought cookies when he dropped it back off today. So it was a win-win for everybody. But he was telling me a story right before I jumped on here that a kid needed crowns on BILNS. And the kid's a great kid. And he said, any other time I'd have been splitting that treatment plan up. And he did all four crowns on this kid. Wow. So that opens another spot on his schedule later in the month. That opens up mom not, you know, trying to squeeze the kid in between gymnastics and whatever else. Mm-hmm. So again, like Chris said, it's a win for the doctor, but it's definitely a win for these patients too.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, as quickly as this has become popular, you know, I could see in 10 to 15 years in the textbooks and in residency programs, I don't like throwing the word standard of care around very, you know, everybody uses that word way too often. Like standard of care means if you're not doing it, you could be held liable. But I feel like if we fast forward 10, 15 years, it seems like this could be something that is, you know, more common than not for at least for pediatric dentistry. For adults, I could still see how you make the argument, like they could tolerate it. But it'll be interesting to see how this technology continues to improve and evolve and get in the hands of more dentists and become really commonplace and kind of be the expected go-to. And kind of, I won't say what parents will expect, because a lot of parents, at least in my neighborhood, aren't quite smart enough to kind of know the difference between an intraosseous versus traditional. But I look forward to seeing this, you know, being used more in our profession and kind of develop more of a following. I think it's got a lot of potential. I'm trying to think. I ran through the questions I had for you guys, but as we wrap up, Ann or Chris, is there anything I didn't cover today? Any techniques, Ann, or any like interesting cases or things that you would add that I missed? Or Chris, on your end, any cool features that you would like to hit on that I missed in my notes and questions as we start kind of closing up here?
I just yeah, I two things that come to mind for me are one, right. It's a very small footprint on the earth as well. You're not throwing a bunch of plastics away. It's literally your carpule and your needle. So if you think of it that way, there's not a lot of excess carbon footprint when you're using if you're trying to keep everything green. And then the second thing is, I just want to say that my last comment will be that Laurie and I are here for everybody. We want to see this get, like you said, we want to see everybody have this as mainstream, normalized, whatever you want to call it, because it is, and it changes your practice. And there's not much that you can get excited about when you've been doing pediatric dentistry for 30 years. And this is one thing that just has me like completely wound up. So again, just Laurie and I are here. You can tell when we give our webinars, we give our personal information out. We want everybody, Chris and his posse over at New Smile Tech are there to help with the settings on the unit, any issues you're having, that way that you don't understand. But as far as clinical technique, we're your people to reach out to, and we want to help you. You're never, your listeners are never bothering us. And thank you for for attacking this and being an early adopter and attacking this topic today.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I would add, definitely a lot of information's on the New Smile website. So just go to newsmile.com, plenty of resources, education materials on there. We also have all of the webinars, recorded versions of them posted on the website as well. So they can go back and look at Ann's webinars and look at Dr. Laurie's as well. And then the next step, would be to jump on a webinar for yourself. Next one's April 3rd.
I think the next step would be to buy the unit.
I like that idea. That's a great, actually, that was
something for Casey.
is there a wait time or a wait list, kind of like BioFlex crowns where I got to wait 6 months if I order one, or do you guys have actual units for purchase ready to go? How quickly can I get a hold of one of these if I want one?
No, we actually have full inventory in stock here at headquarters in Houston. So as soon as you place that order, order's processed. We send that out the door, usually five business days.
Cool. Do you order online just on the New Smile website, like you would a crown, like the crowns, or should somebody contact you directly to order a unit?
People are more than welcome to contact me directly. I can definitely give my contact info, but you are able to access and purchase all of the products, the units, the needles, the extra plastic containers right from the New Smile website as if you were ordering crowns.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. I have one last little joke, and then I'm going to end Chris and Ann by maybe having you guys give your contact info here. But I forgot to tell you, Ann, sure. You talked about the early adopters. One thing that I thought was kind of funny is, a product is a bit disruptive in an industry when you see the old bulls in the bullpen, like Brian Richards, a guy who's been practicing pediatric dentistry for three decades. He's about as old school voice control as they, rubber dam and no nitrous as they come. And he's on Facebook talking about how cool it is. Like, when you can take a guy that's been doing traditional local anesthetic and old school pediatric dentist and convince him that this thing is the cat's pajamas, like, we're onto something there. So shout out to Brian.
That is so true. And that's what I said to this doctor today. I used two other people's names who I said, these people are risk averse. They're the last to the party, and they both bought them, took the leap of faith, and now you'd have to like pry it out of their dead cold hand.
I love it. Okay, let's wrap up. Chris, Ann, go ahead. Give the listeners some contact info, an email or a number or some way to get in contact with you guys if somebody wants to either learn more about the products, get in touch with you guys, ask clinical questions. What's a good way to get in touch?
Yeah, real quick for me, newsmile.com has a lot of the information. My email address is simple. It's chris@newsmiletech.com. Ask any questions. I'm happy to jump on the phone with anybody, video chats, all in all.
My thing is, a lot of people already follow me on social media, but you can go to any of my social media channels, Holly Tree Pediatric Dentistry, or my personal, Ann Bynum. You can DM me on either of those, or my cell phone, which is 864-979-9792.
Love it. You guys both, this great conversation. hopefully we get some listeners fired up about this. And I know you guys will be at AAPD, I'm sure. You'll be at Bourbon and Baby Teeth. So if any listeners want to maybe experiment, besides the webinars, might be a good chance to kind of check those out in person as well, if I'm correct there.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, hey, you guys have a good rest of your Thursday, and I'll see you guys probably not at AAPD because I have a wedding, but we'll all get together and we'll do like a round of whiskeys at Bourbon and Baby Teeth. All right.
Thank you, Casey.
Cool.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Casey. All right,
thanks, guys. Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Brews and Tiny Teeth podcast. Be sure to DM our host, Casey Getz, on social media with any listener questions, comments, or tough critical situations. We'll see you next week for another unfiltered episode.